Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Right Owl Politics. My name is Ariana Mendez, your host, coming to you from Miami, Florida. For those of you who are new to the show, welcome. Thanks for tuning in. I'm a Cuban-American attorney from Florida and a conservative political analyst, have been involved in local politics for a long time, and now I chat politics every Friday here with you and like to say that this is not your dad's political news show. So welcome and I hope you enjoy. So a lot has happened this week. The Democrats finally had their convention. A lot of star power, a lot of celebrities, Billie Eilish, Eva Longoria, and of course, Democratic bigwigs like Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Michelle Obama, Barack Obama. Hitting it out of the park? Not so much. Dull message, dull platform, doomsday, doom and gloom. It's the end of the world as we know it. And guess who's to blame for these doomsday scenarios? You guessed it, Donald Trump. I must say, as a political aficionado, meaning I've been following politics for many years, well over a decade, the first convention I ever watched was the 2004 Republican convention, and have not missed any convention since then on either side. This has been the most lackluster convention put on by the Democrats ever. The message is stale. The speakers were flat. And even the candidate himself, Joe Biden, yesterday he delivered his acceptance speech of the Democratic nomination. It was just okay, it was well delivered. Okay, he came across as, you know, not senile. That I guess that's the new bar for Joe Biden nowadays. But as far as inspirational, as far as, you know, moving, as far as, you know, convincing somebody out there who's listening, who's concerned about COVID-19, concerned about getting the virus, speaking to that person out there and telling them, hey, I am important enough. I am somebody that you should risk your life, health, and safety for and go to the polls and vote for. That objective was not accomplished by Biden's speech. And you cannot run for president, and Romney made the same mistake in 2012. You cannot run for president on a platform of, at least I'm not the other guy. Romney did it and failed with Obama, and Biden looks like he's on the same path with Trump. Look, I say this over and over again, and I may be sounding like a broken record, but when you are running for any office, you have to give people something to vote for. You can't just say, oh, well, you know, I'm better than so-and-so, that makes me a better candidate. No, you actually have to convince people that you're worth their time and vote. You have to convince people that there's something about you that's worth them putting a pause to their life and going to the polls and casting a vote for you. And after 4 days of hearing, you know, the Democrat platform, I don't think that was accomplished. Dull, stale, doomsday scenarios, all blaming Trump. Completely unreasonable, completely uninspirational. So I frankly feel the objective of a convention is to fire up enthusiasm for a candidacy, and it failed. Failed, failed, failed. Now, next week, the Republicans will have their chance to shine, and we'll see what they can come up with. Trump is scheduled to appear every day of the convention, which is unusual for conventions. Usually, the candidate appears in person the last night of the convention when they delivered their acceptance speech of the nomination. So they're switching it up over there, and we'll see. We'll see. It should be an interesting contrast. We'll see what's their approach to this uncertain year, because 2020 has been a very uncertain year. But here on the show today, we have Ileana Garcia. And full disclosure, Ileana Garcia and I have been friends for a while. I knew her back when she was a kind of a big thing on the local level here in Miami in Hispanic television and radio. And she traded all of that back in 2016 for a career in politics. She founded Latinas for Trump and hasn't looked back since. Now she's running for Florida Senate, and she's here to talk about her platform, her campaign, what it means to be a conservative woman in 2020, and how do we look into the future with optimism as we face very difficult challenges this year and beyond. So without further ado, let's jump right in.
Hey, Liana, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm really excited to have you on. A lot of people don't know this, but you and I have known each other for a bit. I think the first time I met you was on the Rick Sanchez show here in Miami, maybe, 4 or 5 years ago. And you definitely left an impression, and that was during the time where Trump was coming up through the ranks of the GOP primary, and I remember having very good conversations with you on that, but you were a Trump supporter early on.
Yeah, I think I was one of the first ones. Yeah. I really believed in what he had something to offer, which always serves for a great conversation with people when they sort of want to slap you with political ideologies. And when the reality of what was going on at that moment was, well, what do you have to offer, or what is the game plan moving forward versus what they tell you from re-election to re-election?
Absolutely. And I, at that time, obviously, it was very controversial for you to be, you know, certainly a woman supporting Trump and a Hispanic supporting Trump, but you never let that bother you. You embraced that full-heartedly and then went on and founded Latinas for Trump.
Yes, I did. I mean, I always say that, you know, everyone has a different perception of things depending on, you know, where you were born, you know, what type of education you had. I mean, like I said, not demeaning anybody or anything. And my perception at the time was that this is a person, not a superhero, that obviously had a past, like many of them do. Right. And but it wasn't about him or his past. You know, I wasn't voting for a priest. You know, I wasn't looking for a superhero. I was looking for someone that had, you know, a common sense game plan moving forward to make this country what it is, where everybody decides to come to at a given moment or wants to come to when the other countries have failed them.
And that's extremely inaccurate assessment of his candidacy. But let's get to know you a bit, because you're running for the Florida Senate, District 37.
Yes.
And introduce yourself to our audience. Tell them about your family, your values. Where do you come from?
Well, my parents are from Cuba. I was born in Miami, born and raised. And my values are conservative. I am a very respectful conservative person. I fight for, you know, family values, for freedom, for free markets, for everything that has to do with freedom, you know, that unfortunately the last couple of years have been tied to free stuff, and all of those things come with consequences. I believe in motivating people, not obligating them to do things. I think that people should be responsible for their actions, and not find dependence on things like we've seen in the last couple of years with government. Unfortunately, the previous administration, I think, did a great job at creating dependency. Once again, not speaking from a judgmental standpoint, I always try to speak from a term of, you know, let's go through this conversation and let's realize where we might have made mistakes so that we can fix them, not repeat them, and then, you know, move forward.
So let's start from the beginning. So where were you born?
I was born in Miami, Florida, born and raised, graduated from Miami Senior High School. I don't think there's anything more Miamian than that. Worked in the industry, the radio and television industry, for about 27 years now. Back in 2011, I woke, as they call it, to the whole political situation. Didn't agree with the things that Obama did, but I respected it. And that's where I think that we need to go back to. No, I don't agree with what you say, but I will fight for your right to disagree. We will agree to disagree. In 2016, when I saw him come around with something completely different, and just, you know, researched his patriotism or his love of country for whatever reason. People say, oh, well, because he's a rich playboy. Yeah, whatever reason. It seemed that that they sort of aligned with a lot of the things that a lot of people were thinking, but they did not dare to say. He had a very out-of-the-box approach, and for me, it was a no-brainer at the time to embrace what he represented, and we really didn't have anything to lose at the time. So I jumped into politics because you can complain about it, but complaining doesn't change anything. So I said, if I'm going to complain about it, I'm going to go in and do something about it. I'm going to go in and educate myself, and I'm going to go in and make a difference, whether it's activism, advocacy, you know. And if for whatever reason, let's say, I went in and I supported the wrong person, I'm going to make sure that you hold his feet to the fire to do the right thing. And I think that as citizens of the United States of America, with all of these wonderful liberties, we have a responsibility to do that.
And I think it's interesting how you talk about your journey jumping into politics, because for our national audience, you were a pretty big deal. I mean, you were on local radio, were well known at the local level, and all of a sudden something bit you and you became this political person. Was that a hard decision for you, or it was just you felt that it was the right time, that there was a calling, there was a eureka moment, that that's where you had to be?
Yeah, it was the, what would Oprah call it, an aha moment. Uh-huh. And the transition was just so easy. It was just so easy for me to do. I had worked as obviously a local personality for a very long time, but I'd also done a lot of work across the country as a programmer. When I worked with Spanish Broadcasting Systems, I'd worked in the New York market. I'd worked in Puerto Rico. They had markets in California as well. So for me, it was easy to sort of move around with all of my contacts and do what I did. And I think that it was the Achilles heel of the campaign at that time. You know, Hispanics, females, I think the poor messaging on the campaign's part at the time when everything rolled out in the beginning. And for me, it was Latinas for Trump was a lot more than okay, well, I'm sitting here and I'm waiting for the government to help me. Well, the government helps me by providing opportunities for me to make my own decisions to move forward. You know, people say, oh, you're a feminist. No, I'm a woman. I'm a woman that likes to be treated like a woman, that knows her place as a woman, and that doesn't demean me as a woman, because I know that a man has his place and I have my place. You know, I'm raising a child. I was raising a child at the time. He was much smaller, Ariana, as you know. He's now a man. He's a 23-year-old man. And for me, it was important for him to know where he stands as a man, not emasculate him with my examples, and know that even though he is a man and that he needs to treat women with respect, and women also need to treat themselves with respect. So, you know, moving things forward, Latinas for Trump represented resilient, intelligent influencers, because I wholeheartedly feel that we always teach by example. So that was my thing with Latinas for Trump moving forward. And also my group in particular, which was independent from the campaign, was making sure that immigration laws were finally fixed. People talk about immigration and people talk about the border. What they don't go back and research is that we've had issues with immigration for the longest time. I mean, as a matter of fact, the only reform that we had ever had with immigration was back in 1996, 97, the 1996 or 97 Immigration Reform Act under Clinton, where he actually trickled down and he made it very difficult for a person to be illegal in this country. He made it very difficult for the people that were hiring them. So, you know, it was very interesting to see the hypocrisy come across during the campaign with the Democrats and the Republicans, where they were criticizing Trump for wanting to do something that had already been done, but they sort of watered it down, because once again, it's always a tool to be used to pander from election to election, and then nothing ever gets resolved. And I'm really hoping that it does for various reasons. Number one, in this country, we need to have accountability and fairness with the people who are here already. We need to have accountability and fairness for the people who are going through the process, building up to become American citizens. We need to be accountable for the ones that go through the process and ask for visas. And then we need to hold the governments accountable. The ones that are pushing their own people out of their country, if we continue to give them carte blanche, then they will never be accountable for the people in their own country wanting to be in this country. And I don't think anybody wants to leave their country. I think everyone, you know, wants to be in their country, especially Hispanics. We're very proud of our background. A lot of people don't know or don't realize that the United States aids everybody around the world. So once again, it's about accountability, organization, and respect to the people who do things correctly. And that is the everyday American citizen who follows the law.
So let's talk about District 307. Why are you the better choice?
Listen, I'm holding this incumbent's feet to the fire because he hasn't done anything for the district. He brought any dollars. I did a revisionist history on what he has done so far up in Tallahassee. And it's unfortunate because this is such a beautiful district. And one of the things that he's done is sequester common sense situations that we've needed to move this district forward because of his radical ideology. You know, he's very big on climate change. And listen, I'm all about environment conservation. But I think that everything needs to be measured and everything in due time and in its place. We can't be, you know, you can't be legislating about the roadways or businesses and then all of a sudden sequester the situation because you want to make sure that your climate change ideology is front and center. There is a time and place for everything. It seemed that all he did was complain and complain and complain. And listen, you can complain and point out the problem, but make sure that you have a solution and that you, as the representative in Tallahassee, represent your district and find a way of rolling up your sleeves and making sure the situation gets resolved versus saying, oh, it's his fault, it's hers fault, I couldn't do this, I couldn't do that. No, we're adults. You know, roll up your sleeves, tighten your pants, and do what you got to do for your constituents in the district. And I didn't feel that he was doing anything proactively, not for the Democrats and not for the Republicans. Personally for me, and I don't like to talk to like a politician, but as a constituent, I want to feel that whoever is in this place is not just working for the Democrat that voted for him. You need to work for the Democrat, for the Republican, and for the NPA, and even for the people that didn't work for you in your district. That is why I ran, and that is why I am the better candidate.
So you have a very interesting resume, a lot of different things that you've done in your life. What would you think has been one position or title that you have held that makes you uniquely qualified for this position?
I think that moving around in the communications industry has helped me. I mean, on all levels, whether it's been as a radio personality, a TV personality, as a programmer, as someone who ran the research department, as someone who did media buying. But I think that what truly helped me the most was when I did Hispanic engagement. Communication is vital. You know, many times it's not the messenger, it's the messaging, and vice versa. I think people want to be heard. I think people need to convey their message and feel that they are important. And I really enjoy that, talking to people, listening to people, even if they don't agree with me. And I'd like that to be like likewise. Sometimes it isn't. But I think that if we are going to move forward and live comfortably with differences in this country, we need to respect each other. And I think that my career transitioning into different things, because I wanted to grow and I wanted to do more and to a certain extent do what I'm doing today, which is public service. I don't like to call it politics. I like to call it public service, has helped me. If you ask me what was, you know, the thing that helped me the most get to where I am now was, you know, Hispanic engagement and just really loving, you know, to be out there, to listen to people and wanting to help, you know, everyone feel comfortable in their skin and doing what's best for the community.
So obviously I'm sure you've heard about the news about Kamala Harris being chosen as Biden's VP. A lot of excitement on social media and from liberal commentators about her pick. And there was a constant theme in that coverage, and that was, oh, women should be proud of this moment because you have on the Democratic ticket, you have a woman as a VP candidate. And that triggered for me, Liana, kind of a thought of a bit of outrage, I want to say. There seems to be a trend that, yes, women should support women, except a conservative woman. So it's okay to support another woman if she's a liberal, but a conservative woman doesn't get the same excitement from the press when she runs for public office. Have you faced something similar to that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the time. All the time. But it's as I mentioned, I said, you know, I definitely would embrace a woman, but the right woman. You know, they want to hold us accountable. They want to hold the Republicans accountable all the time by raising the bar, and they lower the bar all the time. Whether it's not embracing other ways to deal with, let's say, unwanted pregnancies, because I am totally pro-life, with education or with birth control. You know, for them, if you have an unwanted pregnancy, you know, let's pull out that tooth like it were a molar. You know, and it's not like that. And once again, it's I'm not talking from a judgmental standpoint. I'm projecting to you what conveys over to us as a Republican. And she's very much, you know, about just, you know, let's resolve this the easy way. Well, life isn't easy. You know, life can be difficult. And Kamala has a very interesting past because as a prosecutor in California, she left a trail of mishaps and, as we would say, dead bodies all over. But the more interesting part about that is that if you're going to raise the bar and you're going to embrace women, you know, it's definitely not with Kamala Harris, who during the debate accused Biden and said to Biden, I believe your accusers and I believe you're a segregationist. So all of a sudden, how do you water that down and pick her and say she's the ideal candidate, she's a woman, embrace her, and say, oh my God, we have to embrace her as a woman? But it's sort of like self-loathing, don't you think? To say, well, we have to embrace her because she's a woman, but at the same time, she was believing the accusers, his accusers, so it makes no sense whatsoever. And going back to the beginning of our conversation, we need to go back to basics and to common sense, everyday solutions and ideologies. You know, it's unmasking the hypocrisy of I'm on one side, I'm on the other. No, you need to be on your side. Your government needs to start at your house with just basics, and then needs to trickle out into everything else. And once again, you know, not allow government to control your life, or even political ideology to control your life. For me, it starts at home, and then it trickles out. So the whole Biden and Kamala situation has been the worst, because once again, I respect there being another party called the Democrats. But number one, they didn't pick the best candidate. You know, they want to talk about Trump, but I mean, if there's someone who's got a dirty past and things, you know, that he did incorrectly during his administration with Obama, you know, it was Biden. And to think that out of all of the candidates that they had, that's the best that they had, you know, is very sad. Is very, very sad. Same thing with Kamala. She did not do well at the polls at all. That they pushed it and they pushed it is another story. But moving forward, you know, I do hope that in the future, I'd like to see a female president, because she's a good female president, you know, not because she's a female, but because she would be a good female representation of everything that we as a woman are, you know, plain and simple.
I agree. So let's say in the election you win. What is your priority in the first 100 days?
In the first 100 days is to step into Tallahassee the following year and look and see where we can mend some of the car crashes that this current incumbent had. It's not about jumping in and being a yes person, but it's about jumping in and seeing, okay, so, you know, obviously some of the issues we're confronting is, you know, small businesses being fixated, jobs, economy, sanitation, responsibility, education. So we need to see where the buck stopped with this current incumbent, because he was sequestering common sense situations. I want to be a plus, not a minus, but I'm also not a yes person. You know, Ariana, that I had never have been. You know, I don't think that you need to grandstand to make your point. I think that you need to be able to negotiate and motivate people to make the right decisions. That's what I would do. Stepping in, seeing where we can mend some of the things that were sort of left off the table because it was an election year and you wanted to make sure that it rolled over to the following year. And we need to fix that. And we need to make sure that as a whole, we start reaching across the table and Republicans and Democrats and independents work to rebuild and relaunch District 37.
And that's very true. You are not a yes person. You have your opinions.
No, I'm not.
So definitely District 37 would be getting a warrior queen as their representative and somebody who would be very, very strong in their convictions and in their presentation of priorities. So I have no doubt about that from you. But I think a lot of people may be listening to this interview and may say, okay, she's hit all the right points, but you know, I'm still not convinced. What would you say to that person?
We would touch upon the subject that they are most concerned about. What would be their concerns? For me, a big concern is walking through the district. A great example, Coral Gables, shut down. A lot of these businesses that we frequented, that we love to walk into, and you met your friends at for happy hour, and it was always happening, and was part of, you know, just this gorgeous district. We live where people vacation, Ariana. At least I do. Mm-hmm. And see that they're not coming back. Martin's Pub, you know, a bunch of places in that area just aren't coming back. Same thing in La Pequeña Lana, you know, and it breaks my heart. These are people, these are mom and pop operations that did everything right. We hit this wall with COVID, and the fact that there was an enormous amount of misinformation and lack of communication, you know, at a local level, at a state level, at a federal level, and that these people just will not make their way back. So it's a matter of us having a conversation, and the only thing that I can tell you trusting in me to roll my sleeves up and making sure that I'm going to go above and beyond to connect the dots and be resilient, not restrictive, not obstructive, you know, not a pain in the behind. No, let's see what I can do for these small businesses and how we can communicate better to make sure that we find programs, that we find people, that we find other politicians that we can bring to the table to help. Same thing for education. You know, a very big deal in this district is, this district is a very moderate district. They want school choice. This current incumbent, because he's a labor attorney, is married to the public school system, which has its merits and its demerits as well. You know, one of the things that DeSantis has done is bring one of the biggest raises in history to the public school system for teachers was through the Republican Party, through the conservatives, you know, and it's something that hasn't been recognized. But at the same time, we need to talk about how can we reform the public school system so that we don't continue throwing money into a system that perhaps, I'm not saying, you know, needs adjustment. You know, we need to feed school choice. If someone doesn't feel comfortable with the school in their district, why wouldn't they be able to travel out of the district and go into another school that they might be more comfortable with? Same thing with vouchers. If kids want to attend private schools because that's what the parent wants, then that's what we should do. So why don't we give the power back to the parents and take away the power from people in government that don't know your kids? You know your kids better than the people in office. So what I want to do is put the power back in people's hands, you know, and the only thing that I can do is convey to them and then start to act on this pathway that I have. And if along the way I'm not doing something right, have an open door policy for people to call me and say, hey, this isn't happening for me. What can we do to make this better? And I am, you know, I'm pretty good about that.
So if people want to know more about your campaign or want to donate or volunteer, where can they go?
They can go to IlianaGarcia.com. IlianaGarcia.com is the website. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I also have a wonderful political committee. It's called No More Socialism. And a lot of people ask me, well, why did you do that? I said, well, because I think it's really important that people really understand what socialism is. You know, socialism is nothing more than communism, masked and cut up and prepared so that you voted in. And then literally you have to fight your way out of it because it sort of, it morphs into a more complicated situation. Once again, I'm all about freedom, free speech, you know, pro-family, free market, free country, you know, even for the communists that want to live in this country, hey, if they want to live in this country and they don't interfere with, you know, with what we are in this country, I'm fine with that. But it's important to know that, you know, I can always fall back on that and that the government is going to help me and not tell me what to do. So No More Socialism was born of that, of teaching people the real way that socialism works and how when it morphs, it becomes a detrimental situation to what this country is.
Well, Ilian, before you go, I want to share with you that Right Owl Politics will be endorsing you for this race. We think you
would
be a great candidate for District 37 and even better representative for that district as a senator. And I think that more people, more women with your values and platform need to be out there, need to be putting their hat in the ring. And you are a great first step for a new wave of talent going into Tallahassee. So you have our support and we're very happy that you are in this race and we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much, Ariana. That means a lot to me. And te felicito, I congratulate you. This concept, this platform is absolutely wonderful. I think it's even more wonderful because you as a woman is embracing it and educating people and motivating people to do the right thing. But then again, respect others that, you know, don't think the same. But hey, you know, we're all in this. You know, we're all in this for the right reasons. So te felicito. Thank you very much. I'm very honored. Y ojalá que se repita. Hopefully this repeats itself again.
Absolutely. And you have an open door invitation to come back on the show whenever you want to chat politics.
Excelente. Muchísimas gracias. Thank you so much.
Bye. Thank you.
Un abrazo. Cuídate. Take care.
Again, Ileana's story really illustrates what I was trying to explain in the introduction of the show. Campaigns that inspire voters to change something in their life. And in Ileana's case, it was to change her career. We have to think about this. Here she was, a successful local TV and radio personality, and she decided, okay, I'm done with that. I'm going to trade that in for a career in politics. Took a leap of faith, founded Latinas for Trump, started on this path that now has taken her to this place where she thought it was appropriate for her to run for the Florida Senate seat for District 37. That is an incredible journey and a very uniquely American one. And a campaign that just says, oh, you know, I'm better because I'm not the other guy, is not a persuasive campaign. So if you were listening to the DNC arguments this week, that was it. We're not Trump. This is not the Republican Party. Vote for Biden because he's not Trump. Those are not sufficient arguments for any voter to vote for a candidate. I don't care who you are. In Ileana's case, in 2016, she was inspired by Trump's campaign, by his platform, and decided to push all her life, all her career achievements in the TV and radio sphere aside and say, you know, I'm going to pursue this path now because I feel inspired to. And now look where she is today running for the Florida Senate District 37 seat. That is a significant decision she made. And it was because she felt inspired by a candidate. Now, if a candidate has that much pull, that means his campaign stands up for something, has a unique platform. But you saying, I'm not the other guy, so that makes me a better choice, is not an argument. So if you're out there, you don't know who to vote for this November, keep that in mind. Would you rather have a candidate that has a clear platform? You may not agree 100% on it, but he has strong leadership skills, knows where he's going, is not afraid to go where he's going, and will stand up for himself and the American people, or some guy who's stale, who's boring, and whose platform is, I'm not Trump. You have to keep that in mind, folks, because we are in the home stretch. After Republicans have their convention next week, it's a fast track to the debates, and then Election Day will be here before you know it. These are very unprecedented times. We need strong leaders, not wishy-washy people that don't know where they stand on issues. We need people with conviction. We need people with clear vision of what their America looks like. Joe Biden doesn't have that vision. But don't take my word for it. Go out, do your homework, compare and contrast. Because it's your vote and you're the one in the driving seat. So guys, thanks for tuning in. Remember, we're not your dad's political news show, so spread the word. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and wherever you hear your podcast. We appreciate you. Thank you for making this show a success. And we'll talk to you next Friday. Take care, guys.